Welcome to The Ralph Report with Ralph Garman.
Hey there, boys and girls. Welcome to the Friday edition of The Ralph Report. It's the end of the week, beginning of a long weekend. So I hope you're in a good mood. We have a pretty good show for you today. We'll be talking, of course, to our UK correspondent like we do every Friday. Steve Ashton will be stopping by. All the new movies in the Cineplexes this weekend. We'll take a look at them as well. The entertainment news, of course, and the wrap-up of my interview with Dave Koechner. All that is right around the corner. But I wanted to kick off the show today by talking about the big news out of the NFL. You may remember last season, there was a big brouhaha about whether players could kneel or not on the sidelines as a form of protest regarding the treatment of African-Americans, primarily young male African-Americans in our country. Trying to draw attention to that problem was the original intent of the kneeling on the sidelines during the national anthem. Then it became something else. Then it became sort of a battle between people who believed it was somehow an insult to the flag or to the country, and those who thought that the very nature of America was the freedom to protest peacefully when you thought things were going wrong. So those two camps were sort of butting heads. And I get why people are passionate about it. I mean, patriotism is a great thing. And the flag is a beautiful symbol, and the national anthem is a great tune, and there's lots to be proud of in America. But if you start losing sight of the freedoms of America, the very things that make this country so special, then the symbols and the songs don't really stand for a whole hell of a lot. Here's what the president said yesterday on Fox and Friends about the NFL's decision to fine players who kneel on the field during the national anthem.
I think that's good. I don't think people should be staying in locker rooms, but still, I think it's good. You have to stand proudly for the national anthem. Well, you shouldn't be playing. You shouldn't be there. Maybe you shouldn't be in the country. You have to stand proudly for the national anthem.
Maybe they shouldn't be in the United States? Is he really saying if you don't practice patriotism the way I think you should, there's a question whether you should be in the United States? And proudly, yep, you have to stand proudly. Are there going to be like proudly police? No, that's not proud enough. Your shoulders are sagging a little bit. Not proud enough. Stand proudly. Or maybe you don't belong in the U.S. Anyway, it's the biggest sports story of the week. And so I thought for sure this was a great time to check in with Jay Busby from Yahoo Sports. Get all the latest on this decision from the NFL in a segment we call What's the Buzz?
What's the buzz? Tell me what's happening. What's the buzz? Tell me what's happening. What's the
buzz? There's a lot of buzz, no pun intended, going on about the NFL and our president and standing up and kneeling down and national anthems. Was this a surprise to you that the NFL has decided to fine players who don't stand during the national anthem?
Well, before we start, I think that we need to have a national anthem. We need to play the national anthem. We need to stand at attention, sir, because that's how these things start. It wasn't a surprise at all. I mean, I knew that something was going to happen. The NFL had to make a decision, and they'd been kicking the can down the road since last season. And finally, this week, right before camps really start to get into high gear, they finally, you know, the can came due. They had to go ahead and make sure that they could come up with something. And what they came up with was a compromise policy that managed to piss off just about everybody, which is a remarkable thing to do. You know, compromise, usually at least somebody's remotely happy. This one, I don't think anybody's happy.
Well, explain to us exactly what the ruling from the NFL was.
Previously, players could do whatever they wanted because there was no specific rule. You could kneel, you could stand, you could lay down, you could, you know, have a smoke, whatever you wanted during the national anthem, because there was nothing saying that you couldn't do it, which is different for the NBA, which says, hey, you're there and you stand. It's been that way for a couple of decades. But the NFL didn't have that rule.
So it was team by team? They would make each decision separately?
It wasn't even that. There was nothing. There was nothing in place. So what they've done now is they've said teams have to be on the field. And they have to be out there standing. They have the option of going back into the locker room. If they want to protest, basically they could stay in the locker room, and then they have, but if they're outside, they've got to be standing up. Otherwise they're risking fines. The team is risking fines, and it just kind of snowballs from there. So it's kind of a half-assed policy that really doesn't satisfy anybody, and it's not going to solve the problem at all.
Now, President Trump was all over television yesterday saying that maybe players shouldn't be in the U.S. if they don't want to stand. And there's been all kinds of hyperbole and hype around this story, which really, I think, is blown out of proportion on so many ways. But it does seem to be a rallying cry and some red meat for Donald Trump's fan base. That's the one occasion where it seems like most of America sides with him on this, right? When you look at the polls online and stuff, it seems like people do think that athletes should have to stand for the national anthem.
Yeah, and it's understandable. I mean, the national anthem, you think, okay, it's our country, it's our freedoms, we have the right to come and play here, and it's what gives us the right to play here, the ability to play here, and in the case of the players, make millions of dollars. What's wrong with that? It's almost a situation, though, where no matter what Trump says, people are going to be wondering what the motivations are behind it, and there's going to be a certain segment of people that just because Trump said it, they're going to be opposed to it. You know, it's and it was the same way with Obama. I mean, you know, either of these guys could have said, you know what, I think puppies are great. And there would be a huge chunk of the population who's like, you know what, screw puppies. I hate them now just because the president likes them. And so there's going to be a little bit of defiance from that. But this cuts a little bit deeper than puppies. It's obviously something that's very, very dear to a lot of Americans. And it puts free speech against patriotism. And the strange thing is that it started out with nothing to do with that. But then once you got the patriotism aspect into it, it was very, very tough to unravel any of this.
A lot of players are unhappy with this. I think the Players Association has some grievances with this as well. Right. Is this the end of it, or do you think there's going to be more debate?
There will be more debate. I mean, they're going to have to figure out a way that the players don't try to just stick a thumb in the NFL's eye just for the sake of doing it. These are competitive guys. These are guys who have all been the alpha dogs in their various communities, and they're not used to being told, hey, stand still, do what we tell you to. They don't like that. And so whether or not they are necessarily thinking long term, I don't know. But I think that there's going to have to be more attention paid. What my suggestion would have been just keep the teams in the locker room all the way to begin with. That's the way it was done before 2009.
Yeah.
Stay in the locker room. Just don't give the visual. Just give the teams a couple extra minutes to prepare. No one's going to be hurt. Play the game. Get on with it. But obviously, that's not what they ended up with.
One more point I got to bring up, and it's funny that my Philadelphia Eagles have been very vocal when it comes to social causes. I know Malcolm Jenkins spoke out against this NFL ruling yesterday. He was very vocal about that. Also, Chris Long, who, of course, donated his salary last season to charity. Now he is being he's being singled out in the media as being selfish and self-aggrandizing and trying to just do this for publicity's sake by this Britt McHenry. Do you know this woman?
I do, not personally, but I know of her. She was on ESPN for a while, and then she got her most notoriety early on was when she was captured on camera berating a parking attendant and doing a little bit of you know who I am. I mean, you know, we've had bad days, but fortunately mine was not captured on a camera like that. But since being let go by ESPN, and ESPN released a lot of people the last few years, she sort of refashioned herself into one of these conservative, truth-telling voices. You know, that's telling truth to the great liberal elite and that kind of thing, which is fine. You know, everybody's got an angle, but yeah, it's very, very tough. I would say it's almost impossible to make an argument against a guy donating his entire salary to charity. But somehow she managed to do that, which I found pretty impressive in a backwards kind of way.
Well, I think it was in reaction to him speaking out against this NFL ruling as well. And she did say that he'd already made millions and his family is rich. So him giving away his salary was meaningless.
That's an interesting interpretation. Yeah.
Yeah. Just trying to get more attention for himself and his family, which I don't see that necessarily being a problem for the Longs. I think they get plenty of attention.
I think they're doing all right. I mean, it's a tough thing, man, because I get every time I write on this, I get emails from all over the country. And emails from, you know, Vietnam veterans who are saying, hey, you know, we love the flag. And I get emails from people who say, screw anybody that kneels for it. I get emails from soldiers who say, hey, I didn't fight to force people to stand. People are all over the map on this huge issue. There's no one right point of view. And of course, since it's such a deeply held one, people are going to really, really react deeply and badly.
Yeah, I'm sure I will get emails and threats of leaving subscribers because we're talking about this. But I did think it was important enough and certainly high profile enough that I had to get you on the show to talk about it. So thanks so much for spending some time today, Buzz.
Absolutely. Hey, don't cut off Ralph because it's coming. Me. Find me on Twitter. Put your keep sending Ralph your Patreon dollars. Point your venom at me. That's where it ought to go.
Thanks, Buzz. I appreciate it, man.
See you, brother.
Thanks to Jay Busby for stopping by. If you love Jay the way I do, you can always follow him and read his stuff over there at Yahoo Sports. And right now, it's time for us to take a look at all the entertainment news in a segment we call the Showbiz Beat. This is good news for Star Wars fans. We've been talking about these standalone films. We've had Solo coming out this weekend. Then, of course, there have been rumors about this Obi-Wan Kenobi standalone film that is supposed to be sort of a prequel to the first Star Wars film, A New Hope. Now it's been announced the Boba Fett movie that we've been promised is happening. And the really good news is that James Mangold will write and direct the standalone movie that is centered on Boba Fett. And why is this good news? Well, James Mangold is the man responsible for Logan, the last Wolverine movie. And if you saw that film, you know how great that was. So great to have him on board with this film. I'm even more excited now. To all the Garmy up in Vancouver, Canada, your commute just got a little cooler. Your mass transit system up there, TransLink, has just rolled out a brand new voice to make the announcements on buses and at SkyTrain stations. Morgan Freeman will be the voice. It's part of a deal with Visa. TransLink is now taking Visa credit cards for payment, and it features Morgan Freeman's voice telling you just that, as well as some other things. Here's a little taste.
Good news, Vancouver. Starting today, you can now tap your Visa to go anywhere TransLink takes you.
He will also be making more standard announcements about bus etiquette, like,
"Hello, bus riders. This is a smoke-free bus, but I'm sure you already knew that."
And also a recorded announcement reminding riders not to put their feet up on empty seats.
"Remember what your mom used to say. Please keep your feet off the furniture. Andy Dufresne is my friend."
However, the timing perhaps could be better for TransLink. Yesterday, it was announced that several women have stepped forward saying that Morgan Freeman sexually harassed them. Two reporters spoke with 16 people for their investigation, eight of whom said they were victims of Morgan Freeman's harassment, and eight who said they witnessed Morgan Freeman's conduct but were not targets of it. His behavior was said to include touching women inappropriately, allegedly attempting to lift a production assistant's skirt, making offensive public comments about women's clothing or bodies, all of it bad stuff. Morgan Freeman has released an apology and a statement to The Hollywood Reporter saying, "Anyone who knows me or has worked with me knows I am not someone who would intentionally offend or knowingly make anyone feel uneasy. I apologize to anyone who felt uncomfortable or disrespected. That was never my intent."
And if I offended you, I'd like to give you a Visa gift card.
Here's some good news when it comes to sexual harassment. Sometime today, it is anticipated that Harvey Weinstein will surrender to authorities in Manhattan and face charges related to alleged sexual misconduct in connection with a probe by the Manhattan District Attorney's Office and the NYPD. There's no word on how many charges he will be facing, but it does seem to be surrounding at least one accuser, Lucia Evans, who reported to investigators that Weinstein forced her to perform oral sex on him in 2004. Weinstein has, of course, denied any wrongdoing. So we'll see what happens. But good news, he's being arrested at least. You ready for some good news involving women? I am. Congratulations to Veep star Julia Louis-Dreyfus. She became this year's recipient of the annual Mark Twain Prize for American Humor. She is the 21st recipient and just the 6th woman to be honored by the John F. Kennedy Center for the Performing Arts. The center announced the nomination this week, noting that for over 4 decades, her wildly original characters and her gift for physical comedy have left us in stitches. Julia will receive the award Sunday, October 21st, at a ceremony in Washington, D.C. This is a pretty impressive list of people to be included on. Some of the other celebrities who have received the same honor: Richard Pryor, Carl Reiner, Bob Newhart, Lily Tomlin, Lauren Michaels, Steve Martin, Neil Simon, Billy Crystal, George Carlin, Tina Fey, Will Ferrell, Ellen DeGeneres, Carol Burnett, Eddie Murphy, Bill Murray, David Letterman, and Bill Cosby. Cosby, however, had his taken back by the Kennedy Center earlier this month.
because he puts the pills in the drinks that make the ladies go night-night.
Are you looking for a really cool car to drive around this summer? Something that really catch people's attention? Well, I think I have the answer for you. How about an OG James Bond Aston Martin? I'm talking the classic 1965 DB5. The one he drove in Goldfinger and Thunderball. Well, the one that was driven by Pierce Brosnan in the opening chase scene of GoldenEye is going up for auction this summer. You may remember the scene. It's where he's driving through the hills of Monaco and he comes across Xenia on the top. And she's got a Ferrari and they go back and forth. It's a great scene. Anyway, this was privately owned. The current owner bought the Aston Martin back in 2001 for the low, low price of $200,000, which at the time was enough to make it the most valuable piece of Bond memorabilia ever sold. Well, that has come and gone, because now it's expected to go for at least $1.6 million, probably more like over $2 million by the time the hammer comes down at that auction in July. So if you're going to get it, you need to break open your piggy bank. And here's a little programming note. I want to give you a heads up. Amazon's Twitch streaming service is holding another one of its TV marathons. They've done several of them so far. They did 48 hours of Saturday Night Live. They've done marathons of Mystery Science Theater 3000 and Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood and Power Rangers. Now on May 29th, which is next Tuesday at 11 a.m. Pacific time, they're going to start a marathon of over 500 classic Doctor Who episodes from the 26 seasons. They're going to do it over a 7-week span, a 6 or 7 hour live block of Doctor Who every day starting next Tuesday. So if you're a Whovian, this is good news for you. Once again, Amazon's Twitch streaming service is where you can find this starting next Tuesday. All right, let's take a look at all the stars born on this day, May 25th. Jamie Kennedy's 48 years old today. Sir Ian McKellen turns 79. Mike Myers, voice of Shrek, and of course Austin Powers and all those great characters on SNL. He's 55 years old. Justin Henry, the little kid from Kramer vs. Kramer. You ever see that movie where Dustin Hoffman and Meryl Streep play a married couple who split up and Dustin Hoffman has to learn how to take care of his small son on his own? Well, that little boy is now 47 years old today. It's madness. Actress Octavia Spencer is 48. Connie Selica is 63. She was so great on The Greatest American Hero. Molly Sims is 45. Frank Oz, legendary Muppeteer, voice of Yoda and Miss Piggy, 74 years old today. Leslie Uggams, who has been a singer and an actress for many years, but her career has seen a rebirth lately as she plays Blind Al in the Deadpool movies. She's 75 years old today. Pro wrestler Sergeant Slaughter is 70 years old. And Anne Heche, a lovely and talented actress, is 49 years old today. And she may also be the most famous celebrity butthole known to the Garmy.
Anne Heche's butthole, Anne Heche's butthole, Anne Heche's butthole. Let's all go inside.
I'm Ralph Garman, and I walk the showbiz beat. And the greatest combination of American and British power since World War II, the 1-2 punch of the showbiz beat, and our friend Steve Ashton from the UK, always makes me smile. Here's Steve. And you know the way we kick off our weekends around here on The Ralph Report. We check in with our man across the pond, Mr. Steve Ashton. How are you, Steve?
Oh, I'm good, Ralph. Ralph Garman, the Danny Wilde to my Lord Brett Rupert George Robert Andrew Sinclair. And if you get that reference, you're a legend. Any guesses?
Is that the Defenders?
Oh, no, he's the theme tune. It's the Persuaders, so you're close.
Persuaders. I knew it was something like that.
Man. It's an early 1970s buddy TV series. It had Tony Curtis and Roger Moore. What a fucking pairing that is. So Tony Curtis is that, like, kind of rough diamond who escaped the tough streets of New York by enlisting in the U.S. Navy, and then he later became a millionaire in the oil business. Some tenuous, weird connection there. And then Roger Moore, who's a former landed gentry, British Army officer, and ex-racing car driver, is fucking glorious. When's the last time you watched The Persuaders?
It's been forever ago.
you've got to go and check out some of the stuff on YouTube. It is one of the most beautiful pairing of 70s naff camp wonderful actors in the world. It is TV heaven. But Ralph, Yoko Ono is in the news. Oh no, I hear you say, to which I say.
Yeah. Oh no.
Yes, she is. A frail-looking Yoko Ono was spotted visiting two of John Lennon's childhood homes this time last week. Now, the artist, let me scrub that out, hang on. The woman who was married to John Lennon was in the city to open a museum show dedicated to their relationship, filled with exhibits from her own private collection. So whilst in Liverpool, which is where I was born, by the way, she visited Mendips, the home of John Lennon, where he spent most of his childhood with his aunt, and she took a photo of herself in his bedroom. She uploaded the photo to Instagram and she wrote, this is John's room in Menlove Avenue. I feel John here with me. I love you, John. Locals at the scene were heard to say, fucking fuck off, do one, you fucking blit. She previously owned the property and she bought it in auction in 2002 before donating it to the National Trust, which now preserves it, which I think is a really wonderful thing. The exhibition to John and Yoko, entitled Double Fantasy, is being displayed at the Museum of Liverpool until April next year. Including the items on display are a pair of John Lennon's iconic wired frame glasses, a rare Sardonyx guitar used by Lennon on the album Double Fantasy, an artwork by John and Yoko. Artwork, which I guess would describe crayon scribbles on a Kleenex, I don't know. Yoko said, and I'm not going to do the accent,
good.
I'm so happy and grateful that we're having our Double Fantasy show in Liverpool. This is where John was born, and I know John would be very happy too. We were a very simple couple, just loving each other every day, and I just wanted to show the simple truth of us. Oh, just your average couple, Ralph.
Yeah.
An inspirational visionary musician and his talentless avant-garde artist wife. What could be more simple?
That's my Yoko.
She said also, I feel John and I are still working together. I always feel his warmth next to me, especially when she wakes up in the middle of the night and feels his warmth running down her leg.
Oh, come on.
What? I'm saying she's incontinent, Ralph. I don't know that for a fact, though. What are your thoughts on Yoko, Ralph? Did she split up the Beatles?
I think she played a large role in it, yes, sir.
No, it was Ringo.
Ringo? How so? Yeah.
Yes. Okay, he's very sinister. I have connections. I'm not even joking.
He's the lovable clown of the group.
No, he's not. I have connections to the Beatles through family and friends, and Ringo is a very dark presence. But that's a story for another time.
Oh, you tease.
Now, he's playing a disgraced politician in his latest role, but Hugh Grant can't help but attract controversy in his real life too. No prostitutes this time, unfortunately. But he was forced to apologize for swearing twice during the Radio 2 Breakfast Show program. He said sorry to mums on the school run after his epic double blunder during an interview to discuss his role as disgraced British politician Jeremy Thorpe in the new BBC biopic, which started last Sunday. When asked about Anthony Hopkins by a man with an even more annoying voice than mine, Chris Evans, this is what he said.
Now, he has said of acting, before you said it, most of the things you said afterwards about acting. Did you know that?
Like?
That it's a bit of a silly profession and he's not quite sure.
Oh, yeah, he always says that. It's, isn't it?
No, you can't say that on the radio.
Oh, sorry.
Don't say that.
It's getting worse.
Can you do me a favour? Just apologise for most of those things.
I'm terribly sorry.
To Mums on the Run.
Mums on the Run.
School Run.
Your kids, okay. Yeah. That's all.
Oh, you rebel. He sweared a little bit on the radio. But he says now he's too old and ugly for romantic comedies and he's moving in a different direction. Jesus. If he's too old and ugly for romantic comedies, what chance does that give me? I mean, the fact that I lack talent, looks or experience. But anyway, the Paddington star is also set to wed the mother of three of his children, Swedish TV producer Anna Eberstein. Surprisingly, he's nearly 60. He's got five kids and he's never been married. So his upcoming nuptials will be one wedding close to his funeral.
Oh, man.
I've got to go now, Ralph. So listen, in all seriousness, my team are playing in the European Champions League final tomorrow against Real Madrid. It's like the Eagles against the Pats.
All right.
It's the underdogs against the big money team darlings of the media with the most expensive superstar players. And our team's anthem is a fucking show tune from the 1945 Rodgers and Hammerstein musical Carousel. So wish them luck, Ralph.
I absolutely will, sir.
Please pray for Liverpool to be champions of Europe. And remember, walk on, walk on with hope in your hearts, and you'll never walk alone. You'll never walk alone.
Ladies and gentlemen, Steve Ashton.
I thought you might have faded out on the last bit.
No, I'm letting that roll. And because it's Friday, we always like to take a look at the new movies that are going to be in Cineplexes over the weekend to give you an idea what you can check out on this long Memorial Day weekend if you want to go to the movies. Here are all the new films, courtesy of The Movie Beat. Well, there's only two movies opening up this weekend. One is in limited release, and it's called Future World. It stars James Franco and Mila Jovovich. And here's how they're selling it. In a post-apocalyptic world, where water and gasoline have long since dried up, a prince from the Oasis must venture out to find medicine for his ailing queen. But along the way, he gets mixed up with the warlord and his robot Ash, which leads to a daring journey through the desolate wastelands.
I loved all the Mad Max films. I do not need this knockoff. Here's a scene from the trailer.
The world entered a new dark age. I was one of the last synthetics to survive.
Rangers!
A lot of dust, a lot of yelling, and a lot of stealing from other films. Pass. And then there's Solo, a Star Wars story. I have been looking forward to this film for some time now, largely because I'm a big fan of Alden Ehrenreich. I first saw him, or remember seeing him at least, in Hail Caesar, and I thought he was terrific in that film, and I thought he was perfectly cast as Han Solo in this film. A lot of people are turning on this movie already. Haven't even seen it, and they're already turning on it. To me, looks like a pretty good heist film. Looks like a Star Wars heist movie, which is okay with me. And plus, we get to see Han meet Chewbacca and Lando Calrissian. How much fun is that going to be? That's my pick for the weekend. Here's a piece from the trailer of Solo.
So this is Sabacc?
Sabacc.
Sabacc. Got it.
You played before?
A couple times, yeah.
Captain Lando Calrissian.
Han Solo.
Looks like you're having a good day. I'm a lucky guy.
Can I ask you a question, Captain Calrissian?
Anything, Han.
It's Han, but that's okay. I heard a story about you. I was wondering if it's true.
Everything you've heard about me is true.
It's a long weekend. That means you got a lot of time to go see the movies. I'm going to go see Solo, and I'm still behind. Haven't had a chance yet to see Deadpool 2. So that's my assignment for this weekend. And Tuesday, hopefully, I'll have seen them both, and I'll tell you what I thought about them. I'm Ralph Garman, and I walk the movie beat. And if you're looking for some live entertainment this weekend, well, if you're in the Kansas City area, may I suggest you go to the Kansas City Improv tonight, tomorrow, or Sunday night and see my pal Dave Koechner. He's going to be there live on stage making you laugh. And this is the last portion of the interview with Dave for this week. In it, we talk more about his career, including Anchorman 2, and also about his charity work. He, along with my buddy Eric Stone Street and Paul Rudd and others, have this amazing charity event they do every year in Kansas City called the Big Slick.
which raises money for a very worthy cause. We talk about that and more in the final installment of my interview with Dave Koechner. The sequel of Anchorman, Anchorman 2, when you guys finally got around to making that, was that all you could have hoped for?
Yes.
The sheer act of doing it must have been
absolutely
worthwhile, worth everything, right?
I enjoyed every day and wished it had never end.
Yeah.
If that was a TV show that went on for 20 years, I would be very happy.
Yeah, I can imagine. Let's talk about Superior Donuts, which sadly we just found out as we're recording this not too long ago that it is no longer. But boy, working with Judd Hirsch, that's got to be... See, for me, a kid like me who grew up on sitcoms, I watched them all, and Taxi was one of those shows that was life-changing for me. Must have been great to be around a guy with that kind of chops and that
And we're doing a live play every week.
Yeah, right, yeah.
Yeah, incredible. Him, Katie Segal, Jermaine Fowler,
right.
Diane Guerrero.
Great cast.
Rel Battle. Just crazy good. You know, you're always shocked when it ends. Not huge. I mean, we didn't tear up the ratings, but I thought they'd give us another year. I really thought we were, you know, coming around. And as a cast, you just can't get better.
Mm.
That was an amazing cast. Maz Gibrani, too. I failed to mention Maz.
Sure,
who I also love.
Television now is such a different animal in the sense that if you aren't blowing up, or especially early, you don't get much of a chance anymore on television. Well, it used to be there was a time where they would nurse shows along or bring them along or allow them to grow or develop or find an audience. It's either, it's like hit or you're gone now these days, it seems like.
Maybe the stakes are higher.
Yeah.
And, you know, if revenues are lower at the network level, and I'll bet they are.
They are, yeah.
Then, there's more pressure. Find something that works right away. And it happens. There are a lot of shows that work right away.
Yeah.
So that would be the model. You can't blame them. It's, you know, why good money after bad?
No,
it's all money.
I get it. You're a guy with a wife and five kids and three dogs. Do you deal with the insecurity of the industry and also being a dad and a husband and all that stuff that you have to be? Is that something you've come to peace with, or do you still struggle with it? I only ask because the insecurity of this industry... It affects a lot of people differently. Some people are like, "That's the life I've chosen, and I'm a circus performer. I'm a vagabond. That's how I live my life." But when you have a family, it's a different thing. The pressures are different, right?
I suppose I don't think about that. I choose to think about the possibilities because I choose to believe I will always work as long as I want to, and I'm very blessed and fortunate that's been the case. That's part of the reason I started going on the road. That means I always have a business.
Right. Yeah.
And I can make that business bigger. It's always tough to go on the road because we do have the five kids and I hate missing things.
Yeah.
But that's also, like you said, that's the life we've chosen. I was so happy that TV came along at the right time. I still have three young kids. I have a great relationship with all my children, but this way you solidify it a little more. If you're doing movies now, you're out of town. You're in Atlanta or you're in
Vancouver or wherever they send you.
So this works out, and it looks like I'm going to have another TV job as well. So I'm pretty happy about that.
A little secret. Anything? You can...
Nothing I can say yet.
All right, won't spoil it.
There are some offers.
We'll keep
which
our
is good,
eyes out.
Which is good.
Do you have any interest in directing or teaching? It seems like you would be great at that.
Directing takes a different mindset that I don't have.
How so?
You have to really be super focused,
hmm.
And you have to know the answer to every question.
But it seems like you see the big picture, even as an actor. And having come up in improv and you talked about motivation and scene structure and how it should play out and stuff, it seemed like those would be skills that you could use as a director and kind of putting those pieces together.
Right. I agree with you, although I don't have a desire to do it.
Well, that's the other thing. If you don't want to, then it doesn't really matter.
Yeah, it doesn't... it's not something I want.
How about teaching? Any interest in that?
No.
No.
I don't think I'm focused enough to teach. I could do workshops.
Yeah, yeah.
But I'd be better served with... But here's the thing. It's hard to teach what's in your brain. Because if someone else's brain doesn't work that way, you can't get them to see it.
Good
I believe
point.
That improv is as easy as a conversation. Just keep having the conversation. People can't do that. They really feel like they must invent. I don't look at it that way. It's really simple. I say... I can take the properties of this leather wallet that happens to be sitting here and use that in an improv scene because I decide I'm going to be leathery. Okay, now if you think leathery, that could be hardened. It could be slippery and oily.
Mm.
It could be tough. It could be stained. You know, if you go out there and you divine that idea, that archetype for your character, you can only win.
Right.
I argue you can play any appliance. You can play any object and let that inform your character, and you always have an answer. Let's say if you're leathery, or because it's a wallet, maybe it's something I have a little secret. And that's what my character is.
Keeping something inside.
Or I've got plenty of cash. So that gives you, that can inform anything you want. Like,
so take on the qualities of that thing, and exactly, you have the answers already there for you.
They're already there.
Yeah. It's true, though. Everyone's process is individual, is how their brain works. So I could see why you wouldn't necessarily feel like you could translate your process to someone else.
Right. That's just not the way I'm wired.
What would your dream job be if you could create your own job? What would the ideal job look like for you that would tick all the boxes, fit in with your home life, your creative life, be artistically fulfilling, also be able to make a living? I mean, what would that
look like? I have a couple of writing partners. So if we're in a situation where we can make films or we could create a couple of different shows that allowed us to be economically stable and at the same time do films, both, you know, just features, animated and live action, that would be a dream.
Yeah.
Where you just play with all your friends.
Yep. Do you like I like the process of being on a set on a film, especially just that energy of everyone sort of turning their particular skill set and focusing in on the same goal. There's something, that community feeling for me is very energizing and sort of it's a pleasure to be around.
I agree. Yeah. Especially with a comedy.
Yeah.
That knows what it is.
If you're laughing all day long, uh-huh. I mean, it doesn't get much better than that. If you want to laugh, nice segue, by the way,
all night long,
go see Dave Koechner. If you're in the Kansas City area, the Kansas City Improv, what are the dates? Is it Friday, Saturday?
It is Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
I'll make sure to get it up on the website and let everybody know, too. So.
It's Memorial Day weekend, so if you're not going out of town there in Missouri, come on down up to Zona Rosa or down or around or over. And my wife is going to open for me.
Oh, my goodness. It's a family affair.
She's going to host. She's going to do 7 minutes, and then my buddy Rob Mayer does the 20, and then I do the hour. So it's the first time it's ever happened.
Lee is a kick. Our wives are friends, and mm-hmm. I always love seeing her. Before I let you go, since we're talking about Kansas City, I would be remiss if I did not mention the Big Slick. We had Eric Stone Street on the show, and we first talked about it. It was the first I had heard about it, but it's all you boys from the Kansas City area. You've got put together. It's you and Eric, and who else is involved?
Rob Riggle.
Riggle, right.
Jason Sudeikis.
You guys put together. It started as a big poker thing, yeah, right? And now has grown to a softball game and everything.
And bowling. It's a big weekend, yeah.
And it's a fundraising event for the Children's Hospital.
Children's
right
Mercy there. Hospital. You can go to bigslickkc.org. And you may be able to still enter and win a chance that we will fly you out to the Big Slick and you get to hang out with all our celebrity friends. We're bringing in like 30 celebrities. And so all you had to do is pay $10, donate $10, and you will be you have a chance to win.
So they entered into a drawing and mm-hmm. then they pull somebody out.
And then somebody comes and gets to hang out with us all weekend.
And it's absolutely a worthy cause. The money that you guys raise for the Children's Hospital there is... it's so necessary and does such good work. So that's another way you can help. Go to, I can find the website.
Well, it's bigslickkc.org.
Bigslickkc.org. David, thank you so much for spending some time with me, man.
Always a pleasure.
It was really a good time, and we'll see you down the road. And that is it for the Ralph Report today. Thanks so much for spending time with me. I hope you have a great holiday weekend. Do me a favor. Spend some time with the people that you love, doing something that you enjoy. That would make me happy. I'm going to take Monday off, so there'll be no new Ralph Report on Monday. But on Tuesday, we will have a brand new Ralph Report and a new player on the field as well. Eddie Pence will be joining me again. Thanks to everybody who seemed to respond to Eddie in a big way. We're going to make him part of the show, and I'm looking forward to having him join me each day here on the Ralph Report. So take care of yourselves and each other, okay? And I will talk to you again on Tuesday. Come on back, because if you don't, I will miss you, because I love you. And I mean it. Bye.